Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Al-Baghdadi and the Underwear Caper. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. I'm sure by now you have heard that the head of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, is dead, killed by American and Kurdish and general intelligence forces, Delta forces in particular, and a dog. I'm sure you've heard about the dog. But you may not have heard about the underwear caper that helped to locate him, confirm that it was him, and so on. So, you know, I always like to tell you about things that you don't hear in the mainstream media. So this is one of those as well. Now, of course, the only problem is that I have been researching this, and there is still conflicting or confusing information about some of these details leading to his, it's leading to his murder. Really, it was our forces surrounded his compound, and ultimately, as you probably know, he committed suicide himself through his suicide vest after he had been asked to surrender by our forces, but he chose to commit suicide because that's the more, you know, that's the way dying in glory is the way he would get rewards in heaven. But it is important to know that we did give him a chance to surrender. Of course, he probably felt that life would be worse if he surrendered as well. So let me tell you some of how we got to him. First of all, the beginning of this was, of course, the U.S. and Kurdish forces and allied forces have been trying to find Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi for years. And there have been, in fact, many reports of his having been killed before this one. And which, of course, apparently were proven to be false. But the finding of his location, it was when he shared his comeback footage in April. Now, I'm pretty sure I've talked about this in a prior show, where he wanted to prove, because there had been all of these claims that he was dead, he wanted to prove that he was still very much alive. And he did a video and on April 30th of this year, an 18-minute address. And that's my dog, who is apparently not happy with my giving credit to Conan, the dog that helped in taking down Bakr al-Baghdadi. He was in this last video, which was a video, it was the first in many years, and you know what? I think I need to stop this while I get my dog more. So this April 30th video that al-Baghdadi ironically created to prove to the world that he was still alive is what started his downfall and his ultimate death. In that video, he was, amongst other things, he was promising to exact revenge on the West. It was really a rallying video, not only to prove that he was alive, but to get everybody jazzed up to keep attacking the West. So now to the underwear caper. I don't know, these terrorists have a thing with underwear. You remember the underwear bomber, the man who got on an airplane with a bomb in his underwear that fortunately didn't detonate, but that is part of the reason why we all have to wait in long lines and be checked by the TSA. That and the shoe bomber, of course. Anyhow, al-Baghdadi and the underwear caper, he was tracked down after a spy was able to steal his dirty underpants for DNA tests to make sure that that it was he. For 5 months, there's been a joint intel cooperation on the ground and monitoring. And there was a mole in Baghdadi's, with Baghdadi. He was one of his security advisors, and he was in contact with people who were helping the CIA, and the information was being relayed back to the CIA. So to prove that there, you know, we needed to prove, we, the U.S. wanted confirmation and to prove that their source, that the mole was real, that, you know, it wasn't someone who's really was a spy for or on the side of Baghdadi. They wanted him to bring something out that would have DNA on it. So he stole Baghdadi's dirty underwear, not a fun task. And that was about 3 months ago, 3 months before the raid on Baghdadi's compound. And then they wanted him to bring out a blood sample as well. And that happened about a month ago. So once these were confirmed as belonging to Baghdadi, of course, they're not explaining how they were able to do that. Then this source was taken to see Baghdadi, and this mole was someone, as I said, on the security detail of Baghdadi, and he was, before they knew that he was a mole, of course, they would take him to see Baghdadi because his job was to tell Baghdadi where to go to be safe, like where to move. Baghdadi was just like Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden was always on the move to try to avoid being captured. And this security source was, this man who was in the security detail of Baghdadi, was brought to Baghdadi. And when he was driven to him, repeatedly to tell him where, to give him advice about security, they told him to sit down on the floor of the car or to get down, you know, to crouch down, to not look out the windows so that he wouldn't be able to know the landmarks, which would lead Baghdadi's enemies to him. But he was able to sneak a peek. And he was able to help to tell the U.S. and the people who to ultimately aid in this detection of where Baghdadi was. This defector, this ISIS defector who was the mole, there are reports, again, as I was saying at the beginning, there are various reports, some sort of give different information than the others, but this informant was able to give detailed knowledge of his whereabouts, and because of, you know, of really looking, paying attention to where he was going, even though he wasn't supposed to be looking. And he was also able to tell a room-by-room layout of Baghdadi's sanctuary so that they could plan the attack on the compound. And he was present, in fact, during the gun battle, and then he was taken to safety 2 days later along with his family. Now, it's been being reported by some that this defector, this mole, had been cultivated as an asset by the Syrian Democratic Forces, the predominantly Kurdish militia that became the ground troops for the U.S.-led campaign to destroy the caliphate. And then he had to prove that he was genuine and so on. And so it was through all of that that we were able to know who it was and get into the compound and so on. And it turned out, well, I'll tell you more about this mole when we come back. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm talking to you about before we left off, I was talking to you about the ISIS spy who betrayed Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. He was a bodyguard who wanted revenge, it turns out. The reason why he wanted revenge was because of mistreatment of his family. And and his family, they were subjected to harsh treatment, and he no longer believed in the future of ISIS. So now there's another little interesting tidbit. Apparently, al-Baghdadi buried treasure and cash worth millions, at least millions, in the desert. If there's time, I'll talk to you a little bit about that too, but I don't suggest you start buying a ticket to go there to look for it. Not only did he provide information about the floor plan of Baghdadi's location, but also information about the escape tunnel, which of course, as you probably know, ended up being Baghdadi's tomb, because that's where he blew himself up after he was being chased, of course, by American forces. Now, let me tell you about some other part. So getting back to the treasure hidden in the desert by al-Baghdadi, there is someone speaking out. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there are varying and conflicting reports about these various things that I'm talking to you about. The underwear caper is pretty definite, however. But there's someone else who has come out to talk about Baghdadi, and that is someone named Mohammed Ali Sajid. He is a detained ISIS suspect, and he's the brother-in-law of al-Baghdadi's wife. And he has been giving, since the death of al-Baghdadi, he has been giving, Mohammed Ali Sajid, that is, has been giving interviews about what he knows about Baghdadi. And he is the one who has been talking about the huge fortune that is buried in various locations across their former territory, the former ISIS territory. And this is because, Baghdadi was big on looting antiquities and government treasures. And he also, through ISIS, controlled all the oil revenue from the region. So the reports I've been reading say millions, but from then this description, it would seem more like it's possibly billions. In any case, I am still not recommending that you go looking in the desert for it. But there probably will be people who now hearing these reports will do just that. I don't mean necessarily people coming. Well, I don't know. I was going to say, I don't mean necessarily people coming from the West, but then again, if people are coming from the West to join ISIS, I guess it would be equally, one could conceive equally of someone doing equally crazy things, which is, would be to go looking in the desert for these treasures. And also Baghdadi, you know, part of his stash is also from donations. It's also cash, and it's donations from regimes and individuals who were who wanted to support ISIS. Now, some of this stash was found by local shepherds, and they don't know how much these local shepherds got, but I say good for the shepherds. Now, you know, there have been, of course, you have presumably seen President Trump talking in the media about the capture and certainly taking his due of credit. I mean, he deserves the credit for this, because this has been a year, you know, he has been trying through, of course, the military and intelligence and so on, trying to locate and cause the death of Baghdadi for years. So he does deserve credit for this. There are some who have criticized, well, there are people who criticize everything Trump does, but there are some who criticize the fact that he was talking about how Baghdadi died a coward, not a hero. And he explains that the reason why he did that is because he wants people, you know, especially young people thinking about going to the Middle East and joining ISIS, to realize that this isn't such a heroic kind of thing, you know, that they would be doing or joining. So, what else? There are, you know, one of the things that I found particularly interesting that we haven't been hearing about was the beginnings of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. He was, well, first of all, you may know that there was a $25 million reward for his capture, or presumably his death. He's been pursued by the U.S. and its allies since the rise of ISIS 5 years ago. And they, you know, eventually put a $25 million bounty on him. Now, at its peak, ISIS controlled 34,000 square miles from western Syria to eastern Iraq, and it imposed its brutal rule on almost 8 million people. I mean, there's no question that Baghdadi was an evil, cruel man and deserved to die. His beginnings, though, his story is kind of interesting. He was born in 1971 in the central Iraqi city of Samarra. He came from a religious Sunni Arab family who claimed to be descended from the Prophet Muhammad's Quraysh tribe. And as a teenager, this is what I found as a psychiatrist particularly interesting, that as a teenager, he was nicknamed the Believer by relatives because of how much time he spent at the local mosque learning how to recite the Quran, and because he would often criticize those who failed to abide by Islamic law, by Sharia. So why I find that particularly interesting is because it wasn't that he was someone who became the leader of ISIS because he was, you know, out for power, although certainly presumably by the time he did, I mean, he went through a lot to get to be the leader, but that he was really, he was steeped in religion even as a teenager. I mean, he was really, it would seem from his background that he really believed in what he was doing, or in that the Quran instructed true believers to destroy the West. So he finished school in the early 1990s, then he moved to Baghdad. He's very well educated. He got a bachelor's and a master's degree in Islamic studies. And then he embarked on a PhD at the Islamic University of Baghdad. And while he was a student, he lived near a Sunni mosque in Baghdad. And he was described as a quiet man who kept to himself, except for when he taught Quranic recitation and played football. It's kind of an interesting way of, it's hard to imagine the leader of ISIS playing football, but he did. I mean, it's sort of a juxtaposition to the pictures that we see of him in his more recent years. He played football for the mosque's club, and he, and then when the U.S. Toppled President Saddam Hussein in 2003, he began helping to found an Islamist insurgent group that attacked U.S. troops and their allies. And in this group, he was the head of the Sharia Committee. So all along, he was really particularly focused on religion. And then I need to take a break now, but when we come back, I'll tell you about, in case you don't know about this, it's really, we almost had him 15 years ago, and that's kind of sad considering all that he has accomplished, all the evil he has accomplished in this 15 years. So when we come back, I'll tell you more about that. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where I left off talking about how Baghdadi's rise from being a teenager who was nicknamed the Believer and very, very ensconced from a very early age in his religion, ultimately pursuing it in a very extremist kind of way. When we left off, I was saying I was going to tell you about how we had him at one time, and we gave him up. In 2004, he was detained by U.S. troops in the city of Fallujah, and he was taken to a detention center at Camp Buka. And that has been described as a university for future leaders of ISIS. And because the inmates in this camp became radicalized, it was kind of like what happens in jails nowadays. The inmates of this camp became radicalized, and they were developing important contacts and networks. And in this camp, he led prayers, he delivered sermons, he taught religious classes. And he was, and sometimes the U.S. administrator asked him to mediate disputes. Now, the sad part is that he was considered a low-level threat by the U.S., and after 10 months, they released him. Now, I wasn't there, but if we have a man in this caught, as a prisoner in the camp, and he's leading prayers, delivering sermons. I mean, the question is, didn't the U.S. have anybody listening to his sermons? I mean, what did he talk about? Certainly, one would hope that we had people who could understand what he was saying, tell the U.S. Administrator that he was talking about things, that were not favorable towards the West. I mean, I can't imagine what else he would have delivered. Here he was, a prisoner in this camp, having these strong beliefs by then already, and teaching religious classes. I mean, what was he teaching if not that Islam tells us that we should kill our enemies if they don't convert? So I don't know, but anyhow, he was considered this low-level threat, and a Pentagon official in 2014, years later, so 10 years later, a Pentagon official told the New York Times, quote, "He was a street thug when we picked him up in 2004. Well, clearly they underestimated him, because he was a man by that time, he was very well educated, very religious, very involved in anti, obviously, in anti-US, this group that he helped found, why would they think that he shouldn't have been let go? This Pentagon official continued to say, it's hard to imagine we could have had a crystal ball then that would tell us he'd become head of ISIS. Well, yeah, maybe not head of ISIS, but certainly dangerous enough to keep. Then after he left this, after Baghdadi left this camp, he is believed to have come into contact with the newly formed Al-Qaeda in Iraq, AQI, which became a major force in the Iraqi insurgency and gathered notoriety for beheadings and so on. And then basically what happened after that is that he rose through the ranks. And then just to remind you, he did, it was he was very much involved and intent on creating the caliphate. And he did release a video in 2014. He did release a video the only video before the more recent one, the one this year, in which he delivered a sermon at the Great Mosque. And it was supposed to rouse a lot of support for ISIS and bring recruits, which it did. But then he wasn't seen, as I was saying earlier, until the video that he did in 2019, which then helped people to locate where it was coming from. And that is what was rather unfortunate. Now, there are different assessments. What's going to happen now? So, okay, ding dong, the witch is dead. Al-Baghdadi is dead. So what does that mean for us in the West? Is it a good thing? I mean, sure, it's a good thing. We can I think all agree that it's a good thing because he was a very evil man and he would have continued to kill people and torment people. I mean, direct his troops, direct ISIS members to do that and to recruit more ISIS members and so on. There's no question but that this was a very powerful and important coup that was done, that his death is very significant. But now there are people who are saying that ISIS is dead now because without him that ISIS is finished. Now this is the there are people who are saying that even if al-Baghdadi was not killed, ISIS is finished. It's over. ISIS doesn't exist anymore. The morale is shattered. People are broken. Even if someone takes over, the organization is over. But then there are people who are saying quite the opposite, that his death, yes, it was a suicide, but really it was a suicide brought about by our closing in on him. So you could also look at it as a murder. So of course that's going to make a lot of people in ISIS and ISIS sympathizers very angry. And so there are some who are saying, we're in fact, our security forces and intelligence and so on are becoming ready or looking for a revenge kind of attack or attacks, some kind of revenge for his death. And so bottom line, we don't really know what's going to happen. We do know, however, just recently, the ISIS has named a new leader. His name is Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi. But we don't know very much more about him, although President Trump is saying we know who he really is. I mean, there are reports that perhaps this isn't his real name. His full name, Abu Ibrahim al-Hashemi al-Qurashi. And so he's being called the new leader, ISIS's new leader and caliph. And, you know, it's not by happenstance that they're also calling him the caliph, because the idea is to, that just because the land, the caliphate, the land has been destroyed by Western forces and Kurds and so on. Our Kurds have been very, it must be said that Kurds, if it were not for the Kurds helping the U.S. and allied forces, we wouldn't have found Baghdadi by now, you know, just now. So who knows when we would have. So they do deserve a lot of credit. But anyhow, so the point of calling the new leader a caliph also is to make the point that the caliphate, you know, isn't dead. That just because the land, the original one was destroyed, doesn't mean that there isn't going to be one in the future. So let's see. So who is he? He is, he's been described as a prominent figure in jihad. A veteran jihadist fighter who had fought against the U.S. in the past. He claims, just like al-Baghdadi, to have been descended from the Prophet Muhammad. And there are still at least between 14,000 and 18,000 members of ISIS in Iraq and Syria, including up to 3,000 foreigners. And that doesn't include all the people who have been going back to, you know, who have come to the Middle East and are now trying to get back, go back to where they came from. So, ding dong, Baghdadi is dead, but ISIS isn't. Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.